Thanks, Peter. So today, first off, let me join the previous speakers in thanking the organizers for putting together this wonderful conference. It's tremendously stimulating, and I think we are all enjoying it very much. So what I want to tell you about today is some recent work that we have been doing on looking at lattice cavity QED systems as a platform to study some interesting many-body physics. So I'm going to be mostly reporting recent results in this talk, and some of this will be complemented by some experimental data that I'll be presenting from Irfan Siddiqui's group. So we have seen throughout this, already in the first day and today, we have seen a number of really interesting platforms to study many-body physics with photons. And luckily, previous speakers have introduced all these platforms except this one, which we will see hopefully later in the conference. These are all polariton excitons, just dice molecules in cavities, cold atoms in optical resonators, and Rydberg polaritons. These really have all their own advantages and realize really interesting physics touching on different issues. Now, I'm going to be focusing on cavity QED lattices as realized mostly in superconducting circuits, though this kind of physics is not really confined to superconducting circuits. And luckily, again, Jens yesterday has introduced these systems. This is an actual image of a two-dimensional realization of such a cavity QED lattice where individual nodes are cavity QED systems well described by James Cumming model. So I'm going to skip most of this introduction because you have heard about this part. And there are also 3D realization of this, where individual nodes are three-dimensional superconducting circuit cavities with transmon qubits in them. And so the thing is that when you turn on a capacitive coupling here, you actually allow the photons to become itinerant, and you turn on this hopping, and this gives you a type of Hubbert model where you can study the competition between kinetic energy, emerging kinetic energy degree of photons, and on-site interaction with the qubits. And you can study interesting questions such as what are the low-temperature phases of this system, more in the condensed matter sort of direction. What is the quench dynamics in these systems where this is a situation where you start one cavity with a lot of photons and see how the system evolves. It's an open system. We have looked at that as well. And then you can also turn on the drives that are acting on individual sites and study a driven dissipative system. So it's a very versatile platform. I'll be focusing on two very specific problems that we have looked at recently. One is to look at what is the thermal radiation coming out of such a lattice system, an array of cavity QED systems. I will point out that this problem is very closely related to the very fundamental problem of black body radiation, and we'll look at what is new there. Yeah. So, and in the second part of my talks, this will be quite quick, and I have to skip a lot of details here. But because I want to focus on more recent work in the second part, which is looking at driven lattices as a tool to dissipatively stabilize interesting states of qubits. Okay, so let me start right away. This is a real superconducting realization of a system of a cavity and an atom like this. You have an artificial atom here. Which couples to a cavity with a vacuum Rabi coupling G here. And when this G, the exchange of excitation between the two-level system formed by this artificial atom and the cavity mode is much bigger than the dissipation rates, then you have it's prudent to think about new quasi-particles in these systems, which are mixed photonic and material excitations. And that's how you get the strong interactions that you typically have in massive systems, material systems, and the long-range coherence of photons. As I said, I won't dwell on these things too much because this has been introduced by previous speakers. When you now turn on this hopping here, which fundamentally is an electric field coupling, then what you get is this what we call the Rabi-Hubbard model or the James Cumming model, Hubbard model. And I want to point out two important, I think, distinctions which are related in some ways to each other with respect to, Hubbard models of material excitations. So in the on-site model here, when you start with the fundamental light-matter interaction, it actually includes these kinds of counter-rotating terms, which are typically neglected because it's said that they do not conserve the energy, it's a Hamiltonian, so it must conserve energy. So it turns out these kinds of things, while small, when you do experiments on a single site, it becomes an important term when you couple these systems together and look at larger systems and look at critical phenomena and things like this. So this has to be included. And what this does is that it breaks the U1 invariance of this James Cumming part, which is this transformation, to a Z2. It breaks it down to a Z2. And that you can already see that this kind of difference symmetry classification, when you put in this term, already tells you that this is important when you go to extended systems. And another important thing is that you have to, of course, these are leaky systems, and everything is coupled to that environment. So you have to include, you have to look at the master equation for the reduced density matrix of these coupled system. So you have to include the photonic decay, two-level system decay, and dephasing on the two-level system, and so on. This is the simplest level of such description, and you can do a lot of sort of refinements on this. So the basic question that I want to immediately address is, if you don't do anything to this system, don't drive and so on, and you start with some initial state like one photon per cavity, where does it go in the long time limit? And you might say, well, it's vacuum, nothing is left. So I just want to argue that it's more interesting than that. This work originates from work we had done with, where the first order is Marco, who is here somewhere in the audience. I'm going to tell you about sort of the sequel of this work that was done with my graduate student Michela Bordio. So I want to now get you there very smoothly from a starting point that I think is very relevant here, and that's the fundamental physics of thermal radiation in a big cavity. So remember, if you go back to your blackbody radiation sort of lecture notes, this is about a big container which is held at temperature T, and you ask what are the properties of the radiation inside such a container. And one thing you can say is that the mean electric field at any point here is zero, but there are finite fluctuations. And if you look at the fluctuations, that's a universal function of temperature of the container. Yeah. And you can open a little hole there and look at radiation that is coming out and ask, what is the spectral content of this radiation? And that is given by the very well-known Planck-Einstein law that tells you that the spectral content of this radiation goes like the cube of the frequency. And this Bose-Einstein factor in the denominator, which gives rise to this typical sort of bump. This is in the wavelength here. You have to convert it to frequency. So now a very good, very black body radiation turns out has not been really quite extensively addressed in modern setting after the development of QED and quantum optics and so on. So, but there's one way that Einstein thought about this problem in his 1916 paper, I think, which is quite useful to think. It's just one way of thinking about this problem. He said, well, there are these dipoles that are on the walls of this container. You know, they are held at temperature T. And at that time, it was known how material particles thermalize. No one knew about photons, you know, that it's discretized and the radiation is discretized and so on. He asked, what is the radiation, properties of radiation emitted by such thermalized emitters? And that's a classical electromagnetic problem. You just look at emission per radiator, and then you look at a statistical ensemble of those and look at the properties of that radiation. And lo and behold, you get this. Yeah, that's how he arrived at this formula. In many ways, he has tried before. So, but in that reasoning, one important thing is neglected. And that is that these dipoles, while they do create this radiation, they actually feel the effect of radiation as well, right? So imagine a dipole here emitting radiation, and this bounces off the container here, and there's another radiator there that sees it, and so on. So it's actually these two-level systems being has to be part of the system, or you know, you have to think about the back action, in other manner of speaking, on the dipoles. And that's what I want to look at now, because it becomes relevant in modern ways of realizing this thing. Yes?
So what exactly do you mean by back action has not been considered? The whole equilibrium comes from emission and absorption, right? The emissivity is the same as the absorptivity.
Yes, because you have to respect this Kirchhoff's law, yes. But, I mean, the thinking is that in this origin, if you go back to these very early papers, there are these emitters, dipoles, that just are there, that are thermalized somehow, it's said, and just are there to emit this radiation whose properties you look at. And of course, there's a distribution established by saying, by going through the stimulated emission absorption, the balance of these rates, you have all this neglects the fact that these photons have a back action on the dipoles. It will become clear now what I mean by this. In other words, that what is thermalizing is actually that those dipoles together entangled with the photons. That's what's thermalizing. I'll come back to this. We can discuss that point a little further, if you wish. So I want to set up the problem now in a very careful way to get you to a point where, you know, I want to point out what's really different, what should be sort of carefully considered. Now imagine you take this big cavity, it's a thermodynamic system, and you mold it in this fashion. You make it, you know, elongated, mold it a little bit, and you come to this regime where this is like a one-dimensional cavity array. And then you take one of the dipoles on this cavity wall and put them into this very central position. Now, this is really a one-dimensional cavity QED lattice, or an array that I've introduced before. So then you ask, what would be the radiation emitted by such a system if it's held at temperature T? And this problem has been looked at. There was a revival in early 90s where people looked at how you can modify thermal radiation by basically looking at photonic materials that are nanostructured and so on. And this is like a photonic crystal, right, cavity, one-dimensional photonic crystal cavity. You know, you can actually generalize in certain sense the Planck-Einstein theory, and that tells you that the spectrum of the radiation emitted here is then proportional to the density of photonic modes, electromagnetic modes in the structure, times a Boltzmann factor. Yeah. So according to that, You know, and this has no consideration about these two-level systems, of course. We'll get back to that. According to that, the collective electromagnetic excitations in the system are really numbered by a sort of a lattice momentum, Q. Okay, let's think it's a large system. And you have a dispersion of the photons, omega k equals omega c, which is in a, you know, individual cavity frequency minus 2j, so it opens up a band. And there's a gap here, right? And if you look at the density of states, you see something like this, which becomes large at the band edges. And there's a gap, most importantly, here, right? And that's the band gap and lowest band gap. Yeah, so you can easily see that the spectrum will be modified due to non-trivial photonic density of states. And now I want to consider a very specific parameter regime. So we will look at a situation where these atoms are highly detuned from omega c, the cavity frequency, or the band. Okay, so atoms are somewhere here. Okay, and then we will also look at a situation where temperature is also very low and in the gap. Then this guy would just say that because this thermal factor is very small when this density of states peaks, that at low temperature, thermal radiation should be really strongly suppressed, yeah, because the temperature is in the gap. So now I want to see whether this is indeed the case. Okay, so this can indeed be done in a, you know, in a superconducting circuit system like this. I mean, there's no experiments yet, but you can see, you know, this is like something you can put on a desktop, actually, an array of cavities like that, though it has to sit in a fridge. And the reason I picked this very special regime is because you can do essentially an exact calculation, okay? And I want to say why that is possible here, why we picked that parameter regime. So let's go back to single site before we couple them together. That's the Ravi model, as I told you before. If you look at the energy levels of this Ravi model, when this atom is far detuned from this cavity, far negative detuned, so atom is very low frequency with respect to the cavity. Let's say your omega A is 1/10 of omega C. Then the energy spectrum of this combined system is split into doublets like this. It forms these kinds of doublets. So this is for as a function of G. So for very small g, then this first lowest excitation is just a vacuum. First excitation is just an atomic excitation. Right, and this excitation is an atomic is a cavity excitation, okay? But as you turn on G, then these guys get rest by a little bit with respect to each other. You can find analytically this little lowest excitation gap that is a little bit detuned from omega A, et cetera, et cetera. What this helps you to do is that you can actually take, just reduce this in proper parameter regime to a just pseudo-spin model, okay? This gives you a, you can think of a spin, pseudo-spin up and down, and split by this delta, which you know is a function of G, how it varies. And that's sort of my Ravi energetics now. Now I'm assuming that when I couple these systems with J, that's much lower than this gap, and temperature is much lower than this gap. So this should be a good description of what this. Now, skipping a lot of details here, if you now turn on the hopping between these cavities, what it gives you then in this language is a spin-flip interaction. Yeah. This is basically an Ising model under an action of a transverse field here. And this has been sort of our starting point that we had figured out in this early work with Marco. And now I'm just going to present you some results on the thermal radiation you'd expect. You can carry, thanks to the pseudo-spin approximation and the way you can exactly solve the spin models, doing this for an open system, coming up with the right way of doing input-output theory, and also how to do photodetection in these systems. There's a lot of technical development to actually find the radiation from a finite chain and look at the spectrum of it. We find that first of all, most importantly, there's actually some radiation now in the gap, okay? And that is pinned at the atomic frequency. So this is the spectrum as calculated here, coming out of the last cavity, and you find that as a function of G, there's a peak that opens, that becomes broader and opens up as G is increased. And if you look at this one cut here at a given G, then the standard blackbody peak would be here. That's sort of the cavity around the cavity band. And we have now amplified this by a factor of 10 to the power 10 to make it visible. And this is the peak that you would observe under these situations. So there's a residual, this is what I mean back action. There's a residual thermal emission at around the cavity frequency. And this is mainly, you can understand this, I mean, the basic tenets of statistical mechanics remain. The only, what is thermalizing are these hybrid quasi-particles of dipoles and light. And that's what gives you this and this peak in the gap. That's all. It's this, you know, neat little story that sort of we ended up after all these technical things that we mostly were focusing about this phase transition in earlier work. You see that as G is increased, or the hopping were to increase, that this peak, this emission gets broader and you get this thing touches zero. A frequency gets soft in the system. That's a ferroelectric transition, and I really have to now move on to the next part. I will skip that part, and we can ask Marco or me if you're interested in that part. So now I want to move on about something recent, and I'm quite excited about. It's actually about, it does its origin in work we had carried out, which is more in the quantum information domain, about how to stabilize the entangled state of a two-qubit system, where the two qubits are, you know, not adjacent but are separated from each other. And we had utilized, to become clear why, photon-mediated interactions to stabilize this thing and so on. So we have, in the meantime, you know, broadened this scope of this sort of work to many body states of many qubits, and that's what I want to focus on here. And so this work has been done mainly with my two postdocs, Kami Aaron and Manas Kulkarni. In the meantime, Kami has already moved. He has gotten a faculty position in a CNRS position at Ecole Normale, and Manas had started earlier on in City University of New York. So, and we have been collaborating on certain aspects of this work with Irfan's group, and Molly and Lei have been sort of spearheading that collaboration. So I want to state a set of goals that I will use as a blueprint to sort of come up with the proper way of doing this, yeah? So let's say we have n qubits, in this case six, and we want to stabilize superconducting qubits. They lie somewhere around the circuit, distributed over the circuit. We want to stabilize the W state of these six qubits. That would be, you know, what you would also refer to as symmetric decay state, let's say, where one spin is flipped at each instant and you have a coherent superposition of these, where each of these spins in the array are, so this is a highly entangled state. It's one class of states, let's say. And you want to do this by dissipative stabilization. Come to that, you know, you could refer to this as Liouvillean engineering. And we want to do this in a way that these qubits may be spatially separated from each other. And we want to use minimal resources and highly controllable parameters. And in this case, it will be microwave drives. So we will be able to tune the microwave amplitudes and frequencies to do this, hopefully. And we would like this state, once it's created, to be persistent, so stable as long as the drives are on. And we want this scheme to be modular in a way, in manifestly scalable, in a way that if you know how to do this with n qubits, it should be clear how to do it with n plus 1 qubits. Yeah. So that was our original motivation for more quantum information related aspects of this thing. But in the meantime, we have this general description. You know, I want to sort of present the most general way of looking at this problem. Okay, it's three slides. So imagine you have N dipoles that sit in an electromagnetic environment. It could be, this environment could be a cavity array, lattice, waveguides, or whatnot. Okay, this is, this collective mode is shown in this yellow. All these dipoles, which are sort of have to be then thought about as a collective dipole, are coupled to this common electromagnetic environment. And the electromagnetic environment is described by boundary conditions, where you have leakage, et cetera, and coherent drives, okay? And so this is the most general Hamiltonian, up to certain caveats that you can write, where you have the spin sitting at sites I, you have the full electromagnetic field, you have the dipole electric field interaction. You have to do this properly, of course, to come to this point. But then you have also the some uncontrolled environment which couples to the dipoles and the electric field. So this could be leakage of the electric field coupling to the vacuum, and this could be spontaneous emission reservoirs that couple to the dipole. So it's very general. Now, because we have no control over it, we would like to integrate this out and get a density matrix, a master equation for the density matrix of the spins and the electromagnetic environment, the controlled part. And so we will go one step further and also integrate out the electromagnetic, engineered electromagnetic field that we have control over, okay, so that we reach a master equation for only the spins, okay? So this is now the master equation describing the dynamics for only the spins. So if you work hard enough, then you can split this into a unitary part and a dissipative part in the rotating frame of these drives, which are on now. And this is, the unitary part is generated by an effective Hamiltonian, and the, you have an effective dissipator, which is relevant at those frequencies. And so what, now, this is what you want to do. Now this guy, effective Hamiltonian, describing the dynamics of qubits, is actually a, you know, is a many-body Hamiltonian now. It has its spectrum, many-body states. The ground state here typically is all spins down, as you'd expect, without drive. This would be all pointing down. And then there are higher excited states. It's just a lower part of that spectrum. And we would like to tweak the drives and so on so that the psi, which is this interesting state we want, is in the manifold of this effective Hamiltonian. Yeah? It doesn't need to be the ground state. It should be one excited state there. Yeah? And then we want to engineer, again, the dissipative part so that this state is the fixed point of the dynamics, so that the steady state is sort of something like this. Yeah? Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could do this? It's, I think, a very a goal that is very worthy to really focus on. I want to tell you, you know, one approach to this in a cavity QED lattice platform. So this kind of system that you have microwave drives that you can control that is delivered to individual sites, I'll be done, I think. So, and you look at this now in some other fashion, and if you integrate out the collective modes of this lattice, which is open and so on, then what you get is that you generate an effective interaction term between the qubits, okay? That's clear, I mean, that's expected. But this specific form of this interaction in the most general setting is has this form, yeah? So this is the kernel of interaction that is generated between a spin sitting at I and a spin sitting at J, which flip with each other spins. And this contains a spectral expansion over the collective modes of this lattice. Okay, and indeed, if were it for not for this GN, which is the light matter coupling per cavity, this would be really the Green's function of a dipole, electromagnetic Green's function of a dipole. So this tells you that, and we have to plug in the frequency of the qubits into here, so that when this qubit frequency is close to one of these collective modes, then one term there becomes large, and you can really play around with this kernel by making, you know, by choosing the frequency that you want to drive this system. So one thing, what this tells us that this spin will interact with each other insofar as this guy can radiate electromagnetic radiation to the other. That's it. That's what Green's function tells us. Now, in a 1D setting, this gives you an effective Hamiltonian for spin only, which is, again, of a Ising type model with effective magnetic fields that have both the Z, X, and Y components. So it turns out that the X and Y components are proportional to the drive amplitude and their phases, yeah? So you can just, this is what you can engineer with the drive amplitudes. And the Z component of it is just the qubit splitting, but now you're in the rotating frame, and that's also adjustable now. So you can adjust X, Y, Z components with the drive amplitude and frequency. And so if you were to look at this system now immersed into a thermal environment with a many-body spectrum of spins and so on, then you would say, okay, I connect it to a reservoir, I reduce the temperature of this reservoir, and then the system properties should be dominated by the ground state, which hopefully is interesting. Yeah? But in this case, the ground state is really, in typical system parameters, not interesting. It all spins down when the drive is zero. Okay? And that's normal, right? All spins should be down if you connect it to a thermal environment, pretty much. Yeah, it should be disordered state. So if you look at the long time limit of this thing, you know, the system is paramagnetic in the spin language. And so it's not very interesting. But if you turn on the drives, things change dramatically. So what you have then is, if you write this now, you have to write this in many body basis now, so that the unitary part is diagonalized already. And you can write the rates between these many body states in terms of, in terms of these dissipators that you can do. Yeah, this is doable, well-defined in the steady state and so on. So these rates, of course, you know, you say, okay, everything will go up. Nothing interesting should happen. I mean, you know, I will have a highly excited system. But it's not, you can actually utilize what appears in these rates is the density of states of collective photon modes, which we can make very highly sharply peaked. Okay, that's going to be our tool for selective excitation, selective stabilization. So in particular, you know, if this kappa for this collective mode is very low, it's a high Q sort of lattice, then this is very highly peaked around certain discrete frequencies. And these are transition matrix elements which have interesting selection properties. We'll get to that. So here's how you would stabilize this W state. I told you, actually, we are thinking about, if you look at the system at the low energy manifold, then it contains these W states in the one excitation manifold, there's a two excitation manifold, with phases. Let's call them generalized W states, whatever. Okay, but this is a highly highly entangled state. And so this, when you turn on the drive, there will be these rates that take you up to these manifolds and also to here. And spontaneous emission would be taking you down from one excitation to zero, from two to one, just flipping the spin. And you have the pure dephasing that would scramble, basically, make the occupation uniform across these one excitation states. That's the effect of it. Yeah? Yes, certainly, yes. I mean, I'm really talking about finite systems, and you can already do a lot of really interesting physics with finite systems there. So the way you would stabilize a certain state here is that you would then take the drive and detune it from a collective photon mode that is commensurate with exactly this gap. And if you do this, you can make one of these rates huge with respect to all the other rates, all down, up, etc. So I want to, and you can even obtain analytic formulas for the occupation, final steady state occupation of this state. So I want to just show you something we have actually analyzed in detail, a two-qubit system, just to see how it works. Yeah. I have to, so this, in this case, you have two cavities. Collective modes are symmetric and anti-symmetric modes. The effective qubit structure is four levels. You have down, down, one excitation manifold here in the middle. These contain the interesting singlet and triplet states, which are split by delta, which is this, and so, and T plus, which is up, up, yeah? So if you turn on the drives and if you tune to this, this magic frequency, turns out to be exactly between the qubit frequency of in individual cavities and one of the collective modes, like the symmetric mode in this case, right somewhere in the middle of those. Neither resonant with neither of them. Yeah? And if you tune this to this frequency, then for any amplitude of the drive, which is symmetric, let's say, in both things, there's a magic frequency where you reach a huge fidelity for stabilization of a singlet. Yeah? So this can be done in either chip systems like this, where we have analyzed some other dissipated phase transition in some other work. But in this case, this particular stabilization protocol was implemented in Irfan's group via these 3D cavities. The final design is somewhat different than this, but this one illustrates the system better. So here's just an experimental plot of what happens when you change, scan the drive frequency acting on the individual cavities. And you find that when you hit this particular spot, in the steady state, the occupation of the singlet state hits a high. It's a very, it's a very distinct peak. And it's around 70-something percent in this first generation of experiments. So this seems to work, and there's interesting directions we are exploring with this general scheme. And I want to finish by thanking the people who have been involved in this, some of the projects I've talked about, my student Nicola Bordieu, Manas and Camille, and Marco Shiro, and as well as the Berkeley folks. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you very much. There were some complaints in the break that the chairman only accepts questions from the front, so encourage now people from the back.
Yeah, over there.
Regarding the first part of your talk, the black body radiation, I'm not sure I completely appreciate the connection, especially because we are not in the regime where thermal radiation dominates. And how do you deconvolve this effect from the regular Purcell enhancement of a dipole? The fact, why do you think this is the ideal system to study the back action on the dipoles? Because you have these other effects, which I'm not even sure, can you deconvolve it?
These concepts are related, right? Spontaneous emission and thermal radiation in an electromagnetic, modified electromagnetic environment are related to each other. They relate to concepts like density of states of the photonic, local density of states, et cetera. But I'm not sure I entirely understand your question about, I can make the temperature as low as I want. So we make the temperature low, and so that these the fact that the qubit and the photonic mode are entangled become more dominant, that is visible in the observables. That's what we do. So what was your?
So how does it give us extra information over and above the Purcell enhanced decay?
First of all, in Purcell enhanced decay, you have a reversible, you think of an overdamped dynamics of qubits. It's reversible, and all the modes of the environment, including the cavity mode that sort of enhances it, are a reservoir, and when qubit emits into it, it reversibly decays, it goes away. Yeah, that's Purcell regime. Here we are thinking, not thinking, but you can go to a regime where G is more sizable, and there's actually damped Rabi oscillations, so then you can think of quasi-particles which are longer lived, which are these entangled particles whose statistics you are looking into. That's, I guess, that regime. Yes. Sorry.
I would have a question concerning the black body radiation. So in your treatment of the coupling to the extra cavity field, which kind of framework do you use? Because when you have the anti-resonant terms, the master equations are tricky, because for instance, if you use the normal Lindblom master equation, you can have basically emission of photons out of nothing.
Yes.
So
so that wisdom from your early work,
no.
That's included here.
Yeah.
So you know, I've skipped a lot of about. Actually, I'm quite proud of the student who carried out this very heroic calculation. We had, so that had to be taken into account, that you look into a red field, like take into account proper spectrum of the environment fully, because here the system excitations extend from all the way from finite frequencies to very low frequencies.
Sure.
So you probe the entire Bass spectrum. So that has to be done properly. Input-output theory has to be somewhat modified, again, as you know, and this is work of Michael Hartmann that we used. You looked at a single cavity thermal radiation, the Rabi limit, so we sort of generalized to many-body limit, etc. And also theory of photodetection has to be reconsidered.
Sure.
And you know, what you observe when you put a photodetector at these weird regimes is different than the regular way we think about photodetection.
Yeah.
Okay. Satisfactory?
Yes. Because when you have photons in the ground state, it's tricky. So this thermal radiation is.
Yeah.
Top of,
yes.
I mean, it's
yes. Really, yes. I couldn't. Yeah. So this there seems to be there's a ground state which includes finite excitations in the system,
yeah.
And I think the way to think about this is that it's sort of a bound state in the system, so it contains finite excitations. This radiation is on top of that.
Mm.
And that's what we see from outside.
But technically, you did the Lindblad master equation with the dress states. That's what you did.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so in this many-body system, you use the drive and the dissipation to stabilize a sort of a specific state that you were interested in. Is there also other things that you could do in these driven systems? So, for example, have you thought about whether, in some way, one could observe a quantum phase transition in these kinds of driven contexts also? And how would you distinguish the different phases?
That's very interesting. I mean, because that's an interesting direction we are pursuing. That's the many-body aspect that I mentioned. I mean, the original work is really more related to stabilization of an entangled state and so on. But we are looking at many-body aspects. And it turns out that when certain things, when you get to certain parameter regimes, there's actually the photon fluctuations seen by the qubits become highly non-thermal. Yeah. So and it happens in a very narrow frequency regime, and so there's something very dramatic happening at certain parameter regimes. You know, we will probably look at it with methods that we have been discussing this morning and other methods, but there are many interesting questions. This is just like a platform to study that kind of interesting physics, I would say. I can't tell you more about specific findings so far.
So I must say, actually, I am a little bit confused about your second part of the talk. So in particular, in the case of two qubits, you know, I assume that what you prepared is really the subradiant state, right? A singlet is basically a state which is,
It's not. I mean, it can be, but we also can prepare a triplet.
That's right, but by choosing phases and so on.
Yes.
Right? But
yes.
I think this two-qubit system is actually quite unique, specifically in a system which you presented,
yes.
If you just drive selectively one state.
But we are not driving. It's a two-photon transition.
But what you present two photon, but it seems to me that you wouldn't be able to reach like fidelity more than 50% of preparation.
Oh, I mean, you've seen experiments, it's 75%.
But this two qubit system is quite specific. It's quite special, right? So with a two qubit system, basically there are four states in total.
Yes.
And by driving the right kind of phases, you can always pick the situation such that you are basically have one state which is decoupled. right? But if you, for example, go to the 3 qubits, right, you have, like in this kind of, you know, setting, a lot more states which are decoupled. So in this 2-qubit case, it's really quite special.
Misha, I think it's what we are doing is a little different than what you have in mind. And I'd like to understand the specifics, actually, because we do have full, I mean, we have analytical theory, which sort of gets us down to how it works. But we have full Maxwell equation simulations for 3 qubits, 4 qubits.
So then there is a special dark state in this case, or what?
But the dark state is chosen by the drive configuration. So by virtue of driving each site and these drives entering my effective Hamiltonian, we are actually, by adjusting the phases and those, we are actually changing the specific states that are, we can dissipatively come down on. It's, and the trick is to do a two-photon transition. So actually, to the singlet state, we are making, it's a two-photon transition. So two drive photons are required to get there in this setting. That's why it's in the middle that we tune the drive to, where the magic frequency is. And then, therefore, the mean, you know, the background field, the drive field, sort of enters the Hamiltonian, the non-fluctuating part that adjusts the Hamiltonian parameters, gives you available states to cool to, and then the dissipation is done via the fluctuations riding on top of this drive, and we can adjust the, really these two and move it to singlet, triplet in this case. And the only thing that probably we are now exploring is to go beyond one excitation manifold. So I think, you know, one thing we don't know at the point is how to get many body states with more than one excitation. But it's a very general scheme. So, I mean, I guess this is what we'll look up next. But I'd like to know, because that's what you probably.
Just one short comment I wanted to make. So for the spin-spin interactions, there is a paper by Martin Plenio, Fernando Brandao, and myself from like 2007, 2008 mm-hmm. that does all this stuff. And even more generally, because we're using lambda-level atoms and Raman transitions. And
uh-huh. So the work starting, this is about the James Cumming model.
No, it's starting called effective Hubbard spin model. Hamiltonians and cavity areas.
Yeah, I know that work. It's, yeah. And the point is?
It does these things.
Huh?
It does these spin-spin interactions.
Oh, it does. I mean, this kind of spin-spin interactions, you know, I didn't even give any particular references because it comes up in so many contexts, like, you know, bus mediating interaction. You couple 2 qubits to the single same cavity mode, and you study the one mode version of it. And, you know, probably we can fill 2 slides with that. And probably in the next talk, there'll be a whole slide with those references. In many different communities, look at this very interesting, I mean, I think it's just a, you know, framework on its own to look at things.
I just want to follow up on Misha's comment. Mm-hmm. So if the state in the end, maybe clarify this, if the state in the end has the zero expectation value or zero expectation, if the loss on that specific state that you want to end up with is zero, meaning that it's eigenstates of your Lindblad operator, eigenvalue zero, then there is no way that we end up there. Because of the time reversal.
You're talking about dark state.
Yeah. If it's not a dark state.
Yes.
If it's a Hamiltonian that's driving that state, we're going to come back to it depending on how long that Hamiltonian is on. So it's either an eigenstate of the Lindblad with zero eigenvalue.
It is not.
Eigenvalue.
So, I mean, in this case,
then, it's hard to believe.
I think I know how very specifically this thing works. What we are doing is that the rates in this, you basically look at rates in this, you know, many-body state manifold, and just one rate dominates all the others. It's not a mathematical, you know, dark state, really, that we are cooling to. But we want to think in terms of an experimentally relevant situation where certain rates are the way they are, and be able to get there with high fidelity or as high fidelity as possible. That's why. Yeah, so we didn't really engineer things so that this is a dark state. Misha didn't like this.
Okay, I think we should postpone this discussion. So thanks again, Hakan, for this nice talk.